ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening. Welcome to PM. I'm Rachel Mealy, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people in Brisbane. Tonight, a tragic end to the five-day search in the Northern Territory. A body believed to be that of the five-year-old girl who was last seen on Saturday night has been found. Police continue their search for the suspect. Also, a New Zealand court rules the Christchurch terrorist can't appeal against his conviction. And Jewish groups raise questions about intelligence and security failings as the Royal Commission into Anti-Semitism releases its interim report.
How these individuals were able to acquire firearms, how they were able to travel to terror hotspots despite being known to authorities since at least 2019, how they were able to plan and plot and carry out reconnaissance in plain sight.
The Northern Territory Police said it themselves. It was the worst possible outcome. Today, they found the body of a five-year-old girl who they believe was abducted from her home in Alice Springs on Saturday night. For cultural reasons, her family has asked that she be referred to from now on as Kumanjai Little Baby. Northern Territory Police say their number one focus is finding their prime suspect, 47-year-old Jefferson Lewis. Jane Barden reports.
5 days after a massive search started across Alice Springs and remote communities for the little girl, the NT Police delivered the worst possible news. NT Police Commissioner Martin Dole.
Just before midday today, police members of the search party located the body of a young Aboriginal girl. The body was found about 5 kilometres south of the crime scene at Old Timers Camp. This is an incredibly distressing development.
Commissioner Dole says it's horrible news for the little girl's family. The ABC has been asked by her family to now refer to her as Kumanjai Little Baby.
And our thoughts are firmly with them at this devastating time.
Commissioner Dole says the force won't speculate about how she died.
We are not in a position today to provide answers around the cause of death or how long she may have been deceased. A post-mortem examination will now be conducted, most likely tomorrow, and that will be a critical step in establishing those facts.
Officers believe that Kumanjai Little Baby was abducted by 47-year-old Jefferson Lewis, who was recently released from prison. They say he was seen holding her by the hand after she'd been put to bed in a house her mum was visiting in Alice Springs Old Timers Town Camp during a party on Saturday night.
The criminal investigation is ongoing, and a coronial process will now also begin.
Officers had found clothes and bedding near to the house where she disappeared. Forensic examinations of those items have now been completed. NT Police Assistant Commissioner Peter Malley.
Of significance is the pair of child's underwear. We located two DNA profiles on the underwear. One, as expected, belongs to the little girl, and the other belongs to Jefferson Lewis.
He says the force is determined to find Mr. Lewis and suspect that he's being hidden by members of the community. Officers have already searched the Central Australian communities of Lajimanu and Yundamu and Balgo in Western Australia, where he has family ties.
I say to the family of Jefferson Lewis that we believe he's murdered this child. Do not assist him. Get him to the police station and we'll look after him. And I say to Jefferson Lewis, we're coming for you.
NT Police Cultural Reform Executive Director and Alice Springs Indigenous Leader Leanne Little delivered a statement from the little girl's mother.
To Kumanjai Little Baby, Mia Rams, I miss and love you. I know you are in heaven with the rest of the family with Jesus. Me and your brother will meet you one day. We're giving our lives to Jesus. It is going to be so hard to live the rest of our lives without you.
She passed on the child's mother's thanks to the hundreds of volunteers and police who've been searching for her.
Everyone that has come from interstate, police resources, land councils and everyone else that has turned up every day to look for Kumanjai Little Baby. She wants me to pass on her thanks for everything that everybody has done to find her little girl.
The NT Chief Minister, Leah Finocchiaro, says her thoughts are with the family.
Right now, we are focused on a grieving family, a grieving town, and a grieving Northern Territory. And as have police have said, we now focus our energy in making sure we find the person who did this and bring them to justice.
NT Alice Springs Independent MP Robin Lumley joined the search for the little girl over several days. She says she's reeling from this news.
Utter devastation, Jane. This news has come as a shock to me. I truly had convinced myself that she was alive, and I didn't allow myself to think that this little girl could have ended the way she has. So although we've been looking for a body in the grass for days, the fact that they've found one is just devastating.
What will this mean for the town of Alice Springs?
Well, I think it will take some time for us all to process what has happened, come to terms with the fact that evil has prevailed, that someone has ended the life of this little girl. I think it will just take time for us to heal. And for the family, well, it's just a lifelong sentence of grieving and never getting over the loss. It just doesn't happen like that. So it's a very, very sad day, and I feel extremely emotional about it.
That's NT Alice Springs Independent MP Robin Lambley. Dane Barden reporting. And if this story has caused you any distress, you can call the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Crisis Support Line 13YARN. That's 139276. The federal government says it will implement all 14 of the recommendations in the interim report released today by the Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion. The inquiry is looking into the circumstances leading up to the Bondi terror attack, in which 15 people were killed during a Hanukkah celebration on December the 14th last year. Today's report has been welcomed by Jewish groups, but they say there are key questions that must still be answered. Tanya Dendrinos reports.
Good morning, Commissioner. Good morning, Your Excellency.
Governor-General Sam Mostyn welcomed Commissioner Virginia Bell to Government House in Canberra. The Commissioner handing over her interim report as part of the Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion.
This is a very important matter that you have reported on. I look forward to receiving the final report in due course.
The full interim report was provided to the federal and state governments confidentially, with an edited version made public for national security reasons and the need to avoid prejudice to current criminal proceedings related to the terror attack. Commissioner Bell has made 14 recommendations. Of those, 5 haven't been made public. Many of the remaining recommendations relate to counter-terrorism, including that the Commonwealth considers making the counter-terrorism coordinator's role full-time, for the counter-terrorism handbook to be updated promptly and then at least every 3 years, and for the Australia-New Zealand Counter-Terrorism Committee to review the joint counter-terrorism teams. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese announced the establishment of the Royal Commission on the 8th of January after resisting pressure to do so for weeks after the Bondi attack. Today, he wasted no time when it came to the recommendations directed at the Commonwealth.
We received the report this morning. National Security Committee has met. We've adopted the recommendations. I'm now holding a full-scale press conference to indicate that. I think that clearly is an indication of the fact we're not sitting back and just reading this document. We're acting on it.
Opposition leader Angus Taylor said he'd give a more considered response once he'd had time to properly read the interim report.
What I do understand is that the report has said that our national security agencies are under-resourced and not fit for purpose, and that's something every Australian should be deeply concerned about.
The report outlines resources allocated to national intelligence community agencies and says figures show resourcing has grown over the 5-year period from 2020 to 2025, but states that the Commission has observed that despite this overall increase, the proportion of funding allocated to counter-terrorism significantly declined across the NIC over that period. Questions about whether there was any failure to identify and act upon intelligence in the lead-up to the terror attack or the allocation of police resources to the Hanukkah event for now remain unanswered and, according to the interim report, will be addressed in the Royal Commission hearings. Alex Rivchin is the co-CEO of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry.
Having spoken to families of the dead, to some of the survivors, the burning questions which they had about how these individuals were able to acquire firearms, how they were able to travel to terror hotspots despite being known to authorities since at least 2019, how they were able to plan and plot and carry out reconnaissance in plain sight, why wasn't the event better resourced by police? These are still burning questions which really haven't been resolved.
Still, he says the interim report is an important step and has faith in the process and in the commissioner to ensure these questions are answered. The final two recommendations in today's report are directed jointly at the Commonwealth and states and territories to prioritise efforts to finalise and implement an updated and nationally consistent National Firearms Agreement and to implement the proposed National Gun Buyback Scheme. Roland Brown is Vice President of Gun Control Australia. He hopes those currently against the National Gun Buyback Scheme will now come to the party.
We have Queensland and the Northern Territory, which are not going to participate in a buyback, who are not going to ban the rapid-fire weapons that have been banned in Western Australia and New South Wales. And Tasmania is not going to introduce caps on the numbers of guns because of a deal with the shooting lobby.
The Prime Minister says his government will work constructively with state and territory governments. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns has vowed his government and the state's police force will implement the relevant recommendations in full, with a recommendation for New South Wales Police to increase security procedures at high-risk Jewish festivals and events. The Royal Commission's first hearing block will get underway next week. Commissioner Bell is required to submit her final report and recommendations by the 14th of December, the date that will mark a year since the anti-Semitic attack at Bondi Beach.
Tanya Dendrinos reporting. And for more on today's report from the Royal Commission, I spoke with Linda Ben-Menashe, President of the National Council of Jewish Women Australia. Linda Ben-Menashe, how is the Australian Jewish community feeling right now?
Look, the Australian Jewish community is actually still in trauma after the events of 14 December at Bondi. But the community, I think, is encouraged by the Commission and the fact that progress is being made reasonably quickly in the Commission.
Do the findings of the interim report of the Royal Commission basically confirm what the Jewish community's been warning the public about?
Look, I think before we talk about the findings, I want to refer to the 15 people who were killed at Bondi, not all of whom were Jewish, of course, and their families, and say that our focus still remains on them and on the fact that they were there celebrating a Jewish holiday, that nothing that will come out in the commission can change that, but it will point a way forward. And yes, we have looked backwards at warnings, but we're looking very much forward now at how we can make Australia a safer place for all of us.
The government has adopted all of the report's recommendations. Is that an important first step for your community?
Yes, it really is, because, of course, people have fears about commissions generally, that recommendations might be terrific, but is government going to implement those recommendations? And yes, indeed, we are very encouraged by their acceptance and adoption.
When you read the interim report of the Royal Commission, do you feel that it's on the right track?
I have a tremendous amount of confidence in the Commissioner. I think our community does as well. We regard her as a person of high, high integrity. And I think that this is a good start to this long process of the Commission. And we're very hopeful that the results for all of Australia will be a better place, a safer place for everyone.
Of course, the final report of the Royal Commission won't be handed down until the first anniversary of the attack in December this year. Do you think that the relevant issues are being seen to right now, or are there areas that are being missed?
Well, I think it's too early to say that. I mean, we've got to understand that the commissioner here is working under very real constraints. There's a criminal trial that's still live, and there are all sorts of issues around that that have to be taken into consideration. I think that the commission is going to move forward, as we know, onto the broader issues. It's going to listen to lived experience of Australian Jewish people. It's going to look at drivers of anti-Semitism and the violence that resulted in the Bondi attack. And the Commission's not just about the attack. Today's interim report focused on security issues, but it's only one very small part of a very large picture.
There was an anti-Semitic attack in London overnight. How does the global picture contribute to the sense of safety for Australian Jewish people?
I think that the Australian Jewish community's sense of safety is very much influenced by what is going on in the world. Australia does not live anymore in splendid isolation, and the drivers, the ideological drivers of violence overseas and here are the same. We've got ideological drivers from the far right, we've got them from the far left, and we've certainly got them from the Islamist quarter. And those play out every day all across the world. And sadly, we see them playing out here as well.
You are giving evidence to the Royal Commission. Will you talk about those ideological drivers and what governments can do to influence people's views?
Every person who makes a submission to the Commission is invited to comment on drivers and on recommendations for what the government should do. My evidence does cover those issues as well. And I've also been asked about my personal experiences as an Australian Jewish woman, and my experiences are quite reflective of the Australian Jewish women that our organisation deals with every day. Our daily lives, the impact of the violence around us, of abuse, of harassment, and the behavioural changes that we've had to make in response.
Linda Ben-Menashe, thanks for joining PM.
Thanks so much, Rachel.
And Linda Ben-Menashe is the president of the National Council of Jewish Women Australia. This is PM. I'm Rachel Mealy. You can hear all our programs live or later on ABC Listen. The Australian man who murdered 51 people at two Christchurch mosques in 2019 has had his application for an appeal against his conviction rejected. New Zealand's Court of Appeal dismissed arguments from the convicted terrorist that he was not of sound mind when he pleaded guilty to murder and terrorism charges in 2020. Survivors and families of the victims of the terror attack have welcomed the court's decision, but worry they haven't yet seen the last of the 35-year-old, originally from Grafton in New South Wales. Barbara Miller reports.
In a scathing 78-page ruling, three judges at the New Zealand Court of Appeal have dismissed an application by Brendan Tarrant to appeal his conviction. That's the news. Aya al-Umari, whose brother Hussein was among 51 people shot dead during Friday prayers in March 2019, has been hoping for.
The right outcome, justice has been served again. So it is absolutely the right outcome.
Tarrant was sentenced to life without parole in August 2020 after pleading guilty to charges of murder, attempted murder and terrorism. In a hearing spanning 5 days in Wellington in February this year, he argued that when he pleaded guilty, he was acting irrationally because of the harsh conditions at the prison in Auckland, where he's held in solitary confinement. The judges accepted that Tarrant was suffering a degree of depression in the run-up to deciding to enter his guilty pleas, but that he lied when he described his state of mind as bordering on insanity. Alexander Gillespie is professor of law at Waikato University.
Not any major surprises, except perhaps with the strength with which they came to their decision. I think if there's one sentence you need to take from the judgment, it is utterly devoid of merit. And they came to this conclusion on the basis of what his lawyers had told them, what the prison officials had told them, and what the medical professionals had told them as well. And so they're unequivocal. He was of sound mind when he made his plea. What he's been doing is gaming the system to try to get as much public oxygen and notoriety as possible.
Do you feel proud of New Zealand's institutions?
Yeah, I do. There is no defence to murdering 51 people, streaming it live, and then publishing your manifesto on the internet. But we still went through the correct judicial questions. And the court could have said, look, you're 500 days past when the deadline is, but they still, on the basis of justice, said, we will look at this claim, even though it is difficult, because you don't want to have any ongoing uncertainties about the legitimacy of his conviction so that we can hopefully put this part of a very difficult part of our history behind us.
It's also been revealed that following the February hearing, the gunman dismissed his lawyers and tried to withdraw his application to appeal his conviction and sentence. But the court says Tarrant's application to appeal is now at an end. However, that might not be the last of it. Alexander Gillespie.
I think if there's any potential avenue that he can exploit to keep in the public eye, he will find it. And whether that is within the coronial inquest, which is the next question, whether he can appear at that in New Zealand, or whether he will try to seek some kind of leverage for the international UN bodies.
Aya Alomari is also bracing herself for possible further legal challenges. Do you think you've seen the last of him?
Oh, no. I mean, judging by historically how he's been there, I don't think so. I think there is still going to be some attempt to be in the limelight, but at least for now, it's put to the side.
Whatever is to come for victims and families whose resilience has been tested time and time again, today's judgment is another important milestone on a long and difficult road.
Barbara Miller. If you've tried booking a flight recently, you might have noticed that some airfare prices are either skyrocketing or they're going cheap. As the fuel crisis from the US-Israeli-led conflict in Iran continues, travel experts say that airlines are trying to shore up future bookings. But for those in rural parts of the country that depend on air travel, there are concerns about the price hikes and fears that more routes could be cancelled. Kimberly Price reports.
In rural Australia, flying is an essential mode of transport.
Commuting by road is 6 hours to Melbourne, 4 hours to Bendigo, 4 hours to Adelaide.
Terry Welch is the Chief Executive Officer of the Mildura-based public hospital. As the country's low jet fuel stocks continue to dominate headlines, he says his community and the hospital are thinking about contingency plans if flights become unavailable.
Like a lot of regional and rural communities, we're impinging on medical staff, nursing staff, key clinical staff being able to fly in and out.
Major airlines are already scaling back operations, with Qantas, Jetstar and Virgin all cutting routes or hiking up some prices, including regional flights and in the busy triangle of Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. The move has some in regional areas, like Terry Welch, concerned.
We're certainly not at panic stations at all at this stage. We've been very reassured in our discussions, but they are definitely happening. It is front of mind.
Fuel price has substantially increased. Jet A1, which is running most of the aircraft in this country, has increased around 150%.
Justin Brown John is the Aviation Academy Senior Manager at RMIT University. He says the sharp increase in jet fuel needs to be covered by airlines.
That's caused the initial increase in just kind of across the board. As the weeks have gone on, we're starting to see this little bit of different change in the way pricing is happening.
At the same time some routes are becoming more expensive or being cut, Justin Brown John says there are also huge airfare discounts available.
We're calling it. This is one of the strongest domestic sales periods we've seen in a while.
Could be time to book your next getaway, with Qantas launching a mega sale overnight.
Up to 25% off at Virgin Australia for domestic flights right now.
So I think airlines are actually making a concerted effort to redistribute the traffic. They're actually trying to funnel traffic into, we'll say, leisure markets where people are much less elastic in their pricing. That's been coupled with a cost of living crisis at the moment. So when you're in that situation, when you have to look at your finances, the first thing to go is probably going to be the holiday. Airlines know this. So that's probably why we're seeing the discount in flights that are occurring on leisure markets in Australia.
In the lead up to Europe's summer and the mid-year school holidays, it's normally a busy travel period. But Dean Long, the CEO of the Australian Travel Industry Association, says there are signs that attitudes towards flying are beginning to change.
We are seeing a drop off for people who haven't got a pre-booking,
and are just holding back their travel spend at the moment.
Moving forward, Dean Long believes the remote parts of Australia where flying and hiring a car or caravan is needed might be the most hurt by the fuel crisis and cost of living pressures this holiday season.
They are starting to feel the impact because of that fuel range anxiety, whether they can get out there and get back. That anxiety is something that's going to really be a problem for the domestic tourism industry.
That's the Australian Travel Industry Association Chief Executive Dean Long, ending that report by Kimberly Price. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Rachel Mealy. The podcast of the full program is available on ABC Listen. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. The NDIS is about to be slashed, but what tool will the government use to determine who gets to stay and who doesn't? Today we speak to Martin Laverty, an architect of the scheme, on what to expect. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.